to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. It is a Monday, the start of a brand new week of news. Let me adjust some levels here. There, we're much better. And obviously, a lot of stuff going on. Today is officially the last, the final day of the George W. Bush administration. And the sun has already set on Washington, D.C. They're packing up the last of the goodies there. I sure hope the Secret Service is counting all the silverware and the towels before they let the Bush family out the door heading back to Texas. But it's their final night in the White House, and my guess is probably George Bush might be trying to barricade himself in the Oval Office. But tomorrow, when Barack Obama is sworn in, George W. Bush will be leaving. It will be the end of one of the darkest chapters in American history, certainly during my own lifespan, which is getting considerable, I might add. And not that I have high hopes for Barack Obama. I marginally preferred him over John McCain, and I emphasize margin. And certainly his cabinet appointment really just seems to be a regurgitation of the Clinton administration. And long-time readers of my website will understand the Clintons and I are not exactly on the best of terms. All right, today is a live show, so if you want to call in and talk, our number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is answering the phones today, so pick up that phone, punch those buttons. Let's get on the air together here. Now, turning to Israel and Gaza, there is a tentative ceasefire in place. And the way it happened over the weekend is Israel announced they were going to call a ceasefire, claiming they had achieved all of their objectives, whatever they were, but said that the ceasefire would remain, but the troops would remain exactly where they were right now. And, of course, this was a ceasefire designed to provoke Hamas to refuse it or reject it because the troops are still there in Gaza. And to put this in context, let's say you wake up one night and you hear a ruckus down by your front door, and just as you get there, an armed robber kicks down the door and he comes in the house and he shoots your wife and he shoots your kid and he shoots your dog, kicks over your aquarium, goes out, sets fire to the kitchen, backs you into the living room, and then while you're in the living room there with your kitchen on fire and everybody dead around you, the burglar says, okay, I'm going to stop shooting at you right here in your living room, and I'm going to live in your living room, and as long as you don't shoot at me, I won't shoot at you. Now, would you go for a deal like that with your fish still flopping on the floor and your family dead and your kitchen on fire and the front door kicked down? And the guy who did it all is saying he's going to stop shooting at you if you'll stop shooting at him, but he gets to go on living in your living room. I wouldn't agree to that deal. I don't think you would. And yet that is essentially what Israel has proposed to Hamas with their ceasefire. Needless to say, Hamas didn't like that deal, but they handled it very well. They came back and they said, we will call a ceasefire for Israel time to leave our country, which is a much more reasonable circumstance. Now, already we are hearing that Israel is not honoring its ceasefire. Press TV is reporting Israeli warships are taking occasional pot shots at apartment buildings along the coast. And they ran a videotape earlier today showing an Israeli helicopter once again dropping white phosphorus incendiary munitions onto residential areas of Gaza. Now, as of right now, it's well over 1,000 dead. That number continues to climb as they start to clear out the rubble and they find more and more bodies underneath it. Thousands are injured, many critical, many crippled for life. 50,000 people have been made homeless. And for all this damage and destruction, Israel has managed to kill 98 actual Hamas people out of an estimated Hamas force of some 20,000. And a lot of these 98 are like Hamas police officers who were killed when the police stations were being bombed. You know, Israel is still trying to sell this idea that Hamas is a terrorist organization, they have no right to be there, and yet we're always hearing that, you know, the Hamas mayor's house got bombed, the Hamas police stations get bombed. This sounds like what it is. Hamas is the legally elected government of Gaza, and Israel's trying to destroy them. And they managed to bag 98, which basically means they killed 10 civilian non-combatants for every single actual fighter that they killed. 10 for one. Civilian for actual combatant. That is an absolutely atrocious, abominable ratio for a nation that is trying to claim they were respectful of civilian lives. Now, one of the things that is really very obvious as Israel tries to save its face from what is basically a repeat of the debacle in Lebanon in 2006, Israel's trying to say, well, we'll go home as long as we can close down the tunnels through which Iran has been smuggling weapons to Hamas. Well, I have been watching very closely the videotapes and photographs that we have seen come out of Gaza in the last couple of weeks, and the only weapons I'm seeing there that are from outside the area are the white phosphorus shells, which were supplied by the United States, the precision-guided bombs, which were supplied by the United States, that were dropped from Israeli warplanes that were supplied by the United States, the white phosphorus munitions supplied by the United States being dropped from Israeli helicopters supplied by the United States. Then there are those flechette rounds, the giant shotgun shells in the tanks, which are also supplied by the United States. We have not seen any of the Israeli airplanes or helicopters shot down by these supposed Iranian surface-to-air missiles that we were told Hamas was smuggling into Gaza. Not one Israeli tank was hit with an anti-tank rocket of any kind. They're all still running just fine, thank you very much. The only weapons, outside of rifles, the only weapons we have seen coming out of Gaza are the homemade rockets that are pounded together out of old food cans and fueled with propellants they make up out of stuff they find right there. If there was ever a time when these supposed Iranian weapons that have been smuggled into Gaza were going to be used, it would have been the last 3 weeks, and we never, ever, ever saw any of them. It's another myth. It is a hoax. Which brings me to the next point of the story here. Israel is openly recruiting Israel supporters online to go in and swamp blogs with Israel's talking points about how Hamas actually killed Palestinian children just to make Israel look bad, not that Israel needs the help. They're out there saying that they're just pushing the same stuff that Tzipi Livni's been pushing for the last couple of days. Israel wants peace. It's all Hamas' fault. Hamas is a terrorist organization. They staged a coup to come to power. This all the stuff that has been disproven over and over and over and over again. And now they're recruiting and organizing people to go onto blogs, to call into talk shows, to push Israel's points of view on the war. Now, two things that you need to keep in mind. I mean, Israel really thinks that if they just scream and holler loud enough that they're going to be able to talk you into remembering Gaza the way Israel wants you to remember it. Not the way it really happened, but the way Israel wants you to remember it. And there's two things that this sells to us. First of all, Israel really does think the rest of the world is so weak-minded and dumb and stupid that they can be convinced by such obvious propaganda techniques. Israel actually believes that. Second, seeing how hard Israel is trying to change the history of what has happened over the last 3 weeks, we may safely assume that they have been trying equally hard to change the history of the last 60 years or more. And as we watch Israel's propaganda efforts unfold before the world, and I've got a lot of examples linked at whatreallyhappened.com today, you can realize this is how they think the world is supposed to work, that if they just hire enough public relations people, that you will all obediently say, yes, Hamas is killing Palestinian babies to make Israel look bad. And I'll give you one more prediction before we move off this subject. Oh, time's up. Got to stop and sell some stuff, pay the bills around here. When we come back, I've got one more comment about Israel, and we're going to get on to Obama and some other issues here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we are talking about Gaza and Israel and Israel's attempt to salvage its and its image following this horrific action on their part. They are putting up all kinds of websites to push Israel's point of view. Those that are foolish enough to have had public feedback buttons are getting a real sense of the fury that is out there regarding Israel. Israel's minions are already all over YouTube flagging as for inappropriate content, meaning pornography, any video that shows where Israel has been lying about the situation in Gaza. Fortunately, websites that embed YouTube videos bypass this mechanism, including whatreallyhappened.com. And one of the other things that we're probably going to see, I'm going to make a prediction here, that, you know, Israel perpetuates itself with this idea that somehow they're the victims, you know, everyone should feel sorry for them. And so I'm going to predict over the next couple of weeks a wave of staged fake hate crime hoaxes. Like, well, we've reported on them numerous times on the website. There's a lot of them out there where they'll spray swastikas on stuff and say, look, the Nazis are after us. And we're already seeing articles where they're trying desperately to remind everybody that the Nazis were bad, which we know. Yeah, the Nazis were bad people. OK, nobody's arguing with that. And how, you know, the Jewish people have suffered and, you know, everybody suffers. It's not unique to one group of people, especially right now in Palestine. But they're going to play for sympathy and they're going to try and do everything they can so that the world stops feeling sympathetic for all the dead Gazans. And start saying, oh, poor little Israel. You watch. This is pattern. They do it over and over again. They don't know when to quit. They don't know when to quit trying to raise on a busted flush, I guess is a polite way of putting it. So you watch. There's going to be some phony hate crimes that are going to show up. And they're going to say, we're being so put upon again. Now, one thing you need to be aware of. Israel's people are already putting out that this is all about anti-Semitism and it's all about hate for the Jewish people. And I'll be the first one to say, hating somebody for their race is wrong, okay? But this isn't what's going on here. The fury being directed at Israel is not because they are any one given ethnic group or any one religion. The fury that is being directed at Israel is because of how they behave and what they do. And that is an appropriate reaction. It is okay to hate those who do hateful things. And that's the situation we have right now. Israel broke the ceasefire. Hamas had stopped launching rockets with a deal with Israel that if the rockets stopped, Israel would open up the border crossings to let food and fuel and medicine in, which Israel never did. Israel didn't keep their half of the ceasefire bargain over the last 6 months. Then on November 4th, Israel attacks Gaza, kills six Palestinians. Then they seal off the border crossings completely in an effort to totally starve out the Palestinians. And then Hamas started firing rockets. And I would have, too, under circumstances like that. So would you, probably. But Israel is trying to say that the only people who are critical of Israel is they're all Jew haters. And they don't. No thinking, reasonable person could ever find fault with Israel, so it must be anti-Semitism. Or if you happen to be of Jewish ancestry and descent like me, you must be a self-hating Jew or whatever the hell they're calling it now, right now. So the battle has, at least for the moment, subsided in Gaza. The battle has moved to the blogosphere and the alternative media. Israel is trying to hard sell their view of what this war was all about. And they really do think you are stupid enough to fall for it. So I hope that you will speak out and prove that they are wrong. All right, turning to more local situations, obviously Barack Obama is heading for Washington. He is making all these little symbolic gestures. He's putting paint on a wall, and he's talking to these people and, you know, emphasizing this thing about everybody must get involved with the country. Well, we all pretty much are involved already. And I know every president comes in, talks about a new spirit of volunteerism, which is we will take care of ourselves while the government takes credit for anything positive that gets done. And actually, we tend to do take care of ourselves. The government really doesn't do that much for us, especially for the amount of money they're taking. But we keep hearing signs that the Obama administration is going to try and enforce more work upon the American people in lieu of raising taxes. And again, this is a violation of the 13th Amendment. So, you know, Obama may be talking about all this thing. I think because of his choices of his administration and a lot of statements he made during the Gaza situation, that he, I think the political honeymoon is already over. He's not even in office there. He gets sworn in tomorrow, and already I think he's lost a lot of the political capital that he once had. Now, speaking of tomorrow, before we get into that, for those of you who listen to the Alex Jones radio show, I will be a guest on the show tomorrow from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Central Time. And because Alex is potentially going to be interviewed by another organization during that same time, yours truly will have the microphone for the Alex Jones show for at least a part of that hour. So I get to be a guest host. So tune in and tell all your friends. And hopefully we'll have a lot more fun there. Now, obviously today is a very sad anniversary. It is Martin Luther King Day. And looking back at that situation, there is no question that Martin Luther King was a very amazing individual in that he captured the public imagination and effected a great deal of change. We know that one of the things he did that did not meet with the approval of the United States government was he started to organize the black community to rebel against the draft, the military draft, because it was obvious that white kids were getting the deferments from the draft, and even when whites and blacks were being drafted, the blacks were winding up on the front lines playing bullet catch. And the white people predominantly wound up back in the rear echelons where they were less likely to be harmed. And that was a very overt form of discrimination that was going on, and Martin Luther King was calling attention to that. And we know, looking back from this age, we know because of the nuclear weapons in Iraq, we know that our government does lie to us. And so it is definitely worthwhile to go back and look at the circumstances around the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King and realize that it is every bit as much of a con job on the American people as the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, John F. Kennedy Jr., Vince Foster, and on and on and on and on. We have an article, it's an exclusive to What Really Happened, in which photographs of the scene where Martin Luther King was shot were compared with the newspaper photos of the people responding to the gunshot, proving that the shot that actually killed Martin Luther King did not come from the rooming house where James Earl Ray was supposedly doing what he did. So I'm not going to get into that in depth, but we're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the end of the Bush regime, the end of the war. in Gaza, the beginning of Barack Obama's presidency. It is a time of transitions. I'm getting some emails from some readers. One of them is that apparently Israel is, in fact, pulling its forces out of Gaza quite rapidly, but they're not officially admitting they're pulling their forces out. So everybody's talking about this all condition of anonymity because nothing's been publicly announced. So it looks like Israel is going home and they're leaving Gaza, but they don't officially want to say anything about it, from which I would conclude that they're concerned about Israel's upcoming elections, that leaving Gaza prematurely, you know, is going to, they're going to lose the political gain they got from killing all these people in there. Well, okay, at least they're leaving and the Gazans can go back to trying and rebuilding their lives. The government of Saudi Arabia is sending $1 billion in aid. Maybe Israel might relent and allow the Iranian aid ship to get in, and certainly the Free Gaza Org boats should be allowed to proceed to bring medicine and food in. The bottom line is Israel really came out of this looking like the gluteus maximus of a large horse. So let's see, another story that a reader just sent in, and yes, apparently there has been in France an attack on a synagogue. Somebody set a car on fire and rolled it into the synagogue. Fortunately, there was very little damage because apparently there were some bombs in the car that, wow, miracle of miracles, they didn't actually go off. So it was good for a lot of press and very little else happened. And we will see more of that. We will see more of that. And I'm going to put some of those up on the website to basically illustrate that a lot of these, you know, hate crimes, and it's not confined to any one group. I mean, if you want to get an education on how these things really work, go look up the name Tawana Brawley and the rape case. That was another hoax that just, you know, people want attention. They want to make political points. There was that teacher at the Claremont Colleges painted her own car with anti-Semitic statements and swastikas. It happens all the time. It really is. And right now, Israel is desperate to get their stuff. I'm looking here at the cart machine. Obviously, as we end one presidential administration and we go into another one, we look at those little quotes that we've had in the cart machine, and it's probably time to say a fond farewell to some of these statements.
The British government has learned that Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
That was the famous 16 words that Bush said in his 2003 State of the Union speech that was part of the justification for going to war. It turned out much after the fact that the claim was completely bogus. Iraq has got plenty of uranium inside its own borders. It doesn't need to buy it from anywhere else. The claim existed solely that they could say they had paperwork on it. The paperwork turned out to be forgeries. When former Ambassador Joe Wilson tried to call attention to the fact that the story was false, the White House smeared him. In the process, they exposed his wife's role as a CIA asset, ending her career, and ending the usefulness of the organization she worked for as a cover, Brooks Jennings and Associates, which had been the CIA's main instrument for tracking nuclear arms throughout the rest of the world. And so absolutely crippled the nation's capability for tracking these kind of arms. So go back. Let's look at a few more of these things here. And we have.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Yes, that was one of those moments where you begin to wonder if there shouldn't be an IQ test as part of the process of becoming president. And this was the red flag warning. We should have been paying attention to this one.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
We're not laughing now there, George. We are not laughing now. And here's another one.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Which was an admission that basically what his idea of truth and your idea of truth are probably very different things. The truth is simply what you sell people. And it may have nothing to do with the factual reality, but you call it the truth and you propagandize it until people are convinced with it. Same attitude we're seeing from all these pro-Israeli activists who are streaming onto the blogs and the Internet, trying to sell, trying to catapult their propaganda ahead of, well, the photographs and so forth. And then finally, as the economy began to deteriorate, this one was perhaps one of the most out-of-touch, cold-hearted statements the man could ever make.
You worked three jobs.
Three jobs, yes.
Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is fantastic that you're doing that.
Thank you.
Get any sleep?
Yeah. Big joke there. This is a woman who's working three jobs just to get by. And Bush is saying, yeah, it's uniquely American. What a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. And then he cracks a joke. You getting any sleep? Well, I am definitely glad to see this man go, and I presume you are as well. So we're going to say goodbye to the cart machine. We're going to start loading it up with new idiocies by new government officials in these coming months here. Now, interestingly enough, you're all familiar with what are called RFID, the radio frequency information device or identification. And these are the little tiny, almost invisible chips that are currently put inside various products at your supermarket so that the inventory tracked automatically. You pull it off the shelf. Notification is immediately sent to the warehouse. Hey, this can of shave cream has been bought. Please schedule a replacement can of shave cream to be put on the truck for the next delivery out there. Okay. A lot of people were very opposed to these very tiny radio transmitters and their associated device because of the potential for abuse to use them to track people. We know that these RFID chips are in clothing that you buy, ostensibly, again, for inventory control, for anti-shoplifting, which is certainly valid. But apparently, the worst fears of the privacy advocates have come true, that the FBI is now deploying a system that will allow the constant monitoring and tracking of where you go and what you are doing because of these little invisible chips, whether they're hidden in your clothes or inside your cell phone or inside your eyeglass frames, or you had them with your breakfast coffee. They're starting to set these little systems where gateways from one place to another have these scanners. And as you walk through, it will say, oh, Michael Rivero, walked into the drugstore this afternoon and he bought a couple of cans of shave cream. And then he went over to the burger place and he got a burger over there. And I'm not doing anything that I'm ashamed of or can be prosecuted for yet. But I am a very private individual, and I don't like the idea that the government, at a time when we've got so many people starving and losing their homes, our government is spending our tax money to set up these systems to watch all of us. I mean, can't you guys, like, go out and find criminals or something instead of treating us like we're the criminals and we're the prison population? I mean, take a look at how Israel has been treating Palestine, with the checkpoints and the crossings and the constant ID and the constant watching. We're becoming that in this country. We have TV cameras watching us from every corner. They're putting radio tags on us so that they know wherever we go. Our cell phones track us wherever we go. Our cell phones can listen to the entire room we're sitting in. And it's happening, folks. And I don't like it, and I'm sure you don't. We're going to take another break. We'll be back for the final segment of our show after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
And welcome back to our show here, final segment of our Monday show, counting down the hours until Barack Obama is sworn in as the next president of the United States. And we will see what, if any, change there will be that we can believe in. I'm I am not hopeful. I think the machine takes care of itself. And as we saw with Ron Paul, anybody who really wants to make a change is just not allowed to play. Not allowed to play at all. Now, of course, any machine breaks down eventually. We're certainly seeing that with the economy. And we are getting word today that some other countries, such as Spain and Greece, are losing their AAA sovereign credit ratings. Ireland is in trouble. They may lose theirs. The United States hasn't yet, but there are rumors that the United States is exerting severe political pressure on the ratings agencies in order to prop our credit rating up. And this is more than just public face and politics. The interest rates that other countries and banking institutions will charge the U.S. government are dependent on those ratings. If the U.S. rating gets dropped, all of a sudden the money that the U.S. is having to borrow and borrow and borrow and borrow becomes that much more expensive. And, of course, you get stuck with that bill. Now, speaking of money and fraudsters and hackers, and by the way, there's another couple of really nasty worms out there right now, so check in at whatreallyhappened.com and take a look for those. But the British banks have just done this rule. You know, there's all this fraud protection. You see it on your credit cards, your checking account, where if you report the fraud promptly, that you will not be charged for it. The bank will basically eat it, and they get it back in fees. Well, because the banks are becoming so tight on money, the British banks, and I would expect the American banks to follow suit very quickly, they've added very quietly a new rule to the situation where if you are a victim of online fraud and they can determine that your computer does not have what they deem to be adequate security safeguards, then they can stick you with the losses from the fraud. So just wanted to let you know, if you're not keeping your computer up to date and you get ripped off, you may have to eat it. You may have to eat that loss entirely. Okay, moving right on down here. A lot of people are talking about Patrick Swayze's new TV show, The Beast, where he plays this very heroic FBI agent. And not surprisingly, it's all very glowing of the FBI and all very dismissive of any other points of view, which is hardly surprising because if you look at the history of the FBI in television, the FBI always, without exception, has directly intervened in any TV or film production that deals with the FBI in order to preserve the FBI's image. For those of you who are of my age, you may have seen a movie called The FBI Story, starring Jimmy Stewart, and J. Edgar Hoover, who was head of the FBI for pretty much his entire life, appears in it in a cameo briefly just from the back. But what most people don't know, a little inside Hollywood story here, is that J. Edgar Hoover was on the set every single day telling the director how to make the movie so that the image of the FBI was exactly what J. Edgar Hoover thought it should be. There have been numerous instances, and we have the paperwork on this is also at whatreallyhappened.com, where the FBI will go in. They will somehow magically get advanced copies of scripts. We know that that certainly happened during the production of Oliver Stone's JFK. And the FBI does keep informants throughout the entire entertainment industry. And if they spot a script that makes the FBI look less than wonderful, the FBI will come in and directly intervene and say, you really don't want to do that. And so I'm not surprised that Patrick Swayze's new TV show follows pretty much the same mold, that it's really wonderful stuff and everybody else is a goofball. And it is really manifesting itself because they're making a mention of the 9/11 truth movement, but they portray the 9/11 truth activist as smoking dope, borderline deranged, you know, convinced that aliens are talking to him through his cell phone or whatever. I mean, I haven't seen the show myself, but there have been a lot of reports about it. And it's a shame because Patrick Swayze himself, I always thought, was a pretty much straight-shooting, stand-up kind of guy. and wasn't prone to this kind of overt propagandization. And little bit of trivia, believe it or not, Patrick Swayze's very first motion picture was also the very first motion picture I ever worked on. And it was this little remembered film called Skate Town USA. And we got to work with some very interesting people. Got to work with Dorothy Stratton, the Playmate of the Year, who subsequently died. Got to work with Billy Barty. And I got to work with him on some other things subsequently. There was a gentleman. There was a real, real gentleman. It was Billy Barty. He was incredible. And Patrick Swayze, you just looking at him, you just knew he was going to be a star. And he just had the quality so much. He was playing the bad guy. And you wanted him to win because the actor playing the good guy was... Dork is the word that comes in there. We've got a caller on the line. Dave, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Aloha, Mike. From the great Midwest out here. We've had proof.
You've got to be freezing right about now.
Well, we've had proof that global warming is taking effect. Because we went from 29 degrees below zero to 20 degrees above zero.
Ah, okay.
And the other thing is I'd like to thank you for the links that you sent me regarding my edification about the Jewish people. I found that on my own I was running into certain difficulties, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Anyway, I got to thinking this sudden withdrawal of the Israeli troops from... this thing just popped into my mind. I'm probably going to go out on a limb here saying this, but you remember when we got the kids back from Tehran when Ronald Reagan took office?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm really going out on a limb, but is it possible that somebody from Obama's camp probably said, hey, you're going to do this or you're not going to get the money? I mean,
A lot of people have suggested it, but I mean, if Obama was going to stand up to Israel, I don't think he would have appointed Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff because, you know, Rahm is as hardcore pro-Zionist as you can get, and the chief of staff position is very, very powerful. Rahm will be deciding who does and does not get to see the president. And that simple authority right there means that for the next 4 years, Barack Obama will see only those people who are supportive of Israel, and he's not likely to get a chance, let me put it the other way around, anybody who is trying to talk about UN Resolution 242 of the Palestinians is probably not going to get a meeting with the president.
Hmm. Yeah, like I said, I was running it through my mind, and I thought, you know, is it possible that... I think the things that the event...
Anything is possible. We'll find out once he's actually got his hands on the keys here. I've heard a lot of talk about, you know, he was going to fulfill his campaign promise to get our kids out of Iraq. Then he turns around and says, well, it's going to take 16 months. I'm sorry, that's not keeping your campaign promise. It doesn't take 16 months to get the kids out of Iraq. Give the Iraqis their country back, apologize for the mess you've made, and bring our kids home. Took only 3 weeks to get them over there. Should only take them 3 weeks to get them back. Less, because we've had so many of them die. And believe me, they'll be rushing on the way back home in a way that we didn't see on the way there.
Okay, well, I just thought I'd run that by you. Maybe in the next few months, maybe we'll see a different Barack than what's kind of being portrayed now. Anyway.
I would love to be pleasantly surprised. And during the campaign, I kept mentioning that it was possible we were going to get another Lyndon Johnson, since we were talking about Martin Luther King earlier in the show today. When Martin Luther King finally got a chance to meet with Lyndon Johnson, and this was just after Lyndon Johnson had started really showing support for desegregation, and Martin Luther King said, you know, I'm gratified and pleased that you are doing this, but this is such a contrast to what you used to be saying in your speeches. And Lyndon Johnson said, well, back then I was campaigning, and now I've got the job. And you know that old Negro spiritual, free at last, thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. And what that meant was Johnson was free now to do what he thought was morally right, as opposed to simply doing what he thought his donors and supporters wanted him to do. And now that Obama's at the top, we may see the same from him. I don't know. Time will solve that mystery. I'd love to be surprised. Anyway, that's it for our show. We'll be back tomorrow, post-inauguration. Don't forget to tune into Alex Jones tomorrow, where I'll be co-hosting on the microphone. Until then, aloha, America.